capacity management. Two words that strike fear in the heart of agency leaders everywhere. What if we don't sell enough this month? What if we sell too much? When should we hire more project managers? What if that team member revolts when I try to give them just two more clients to manage? If you've been living agency life for any length of time, you've probably asked yourself questions just like that. Amber Kemmes, our guest for today's episode, definitely has as well. Amber currently serves as both the Chief Operating Officer at Instrumental Group, an elite HubSpot solution partner, and as a remote culture advisor helping other agencies with operational efficiency at Culturish. She's seen a lot of different approaches to capacity management throughout her career. She's come to realize that there are actually three key components to getting your arms around capacity management for agencies of all sizes. In this conversation, she shares what those three elements are, the challenges with getting your arms around the data that you need in each of these three areas, and probably most importantly, how to handle conversations more effectively about capacity management with your leadership group and the team agency-wide. If you're a regular listener of this show, you know it's story time. So let's hear from Amber about a time when a capacity conversation took her by surprise.
We practice what's called 30-10. And so by default, when our team is doing 30-10, they look ahead and they say, do I have room in my capacity? Do I not have room in my capacity? What was really cool is this individual going into a week was like, everybody on the ops team is like, oh no, this guy is going to be overloaded next week. And instead, this person raised their hand and they were like, actually, I think it's a little overestimated. I think I can crush some things a little bit faster. Serving the client and making them happy is really important. So I'll get it done. I think that person even like volunteered to do some extra work when they were like midweek and they were able to take on more. So I think overall, it's a good example of where sometimes people look at it and they are concerned about being too overloaded, and that starts to cause some anxiety. In this person's case, they were super excited to help other people and realize that, hey, it's nothing to freak out over because he knew his own capacity, pun intended, better than any of the tools that we use.
Yeah, that was very well placed. And it touches on something that I know we're going to get to further in the conversation. And that is that everything is not completely black and white when it comes to capacity management. But we'll hold on that for a second, because you have been in agency life for a while. You've been at different agencies, different sizes of agencies. And it started to become clearer in your mind that there are really three key components that you need to get a grip on from an operations perspective that help you triangulate capacity management. Won't be perfect, and we'll talk later about how to manage those conversations, but what are these three pieces and why are they important from your experience, Amber?
My previous agency, we were highly focused on revenue and filling capacity and looking at capacity versus revenue. So the first is revenue, which I think is a key component, because at the end of the day, we have to make business decisions based on the revenue and the financial impact, and capacity is a part of that. What I realized in the agency I'm in now, Instrumental Group, when coming on board, it was a really stark realization I jumped in, and on a weekly basis, the team was religious about putting time estimates on every task. Wasn't the case always in my career, but they were very religious about that and use that to plan out their workload. So time estimation of like individual work and when that work is going to land is a second piece. It's estimation of the work that's involved. And then the third big piece is all of those tools, revenue, estimates can only go so far if the individual is taking part in that process. And so the individual doing a good job of, we spend 30 minutes planning out our next week, 10 minutes a day resetting. That exercise of the individual being a very active part of capacity planning, it's hard to say which of the three would be the most important, but I feel like if you don't have that one, the other two can fall short.
Well, I won't put you on the spot and have you stack rank them in importance, but I do think that this framework of having these three to triangulate capacity management, as opposed to looking at it through one lens, can be really helpful. So just to recap there, you mentioned revenue, time estimates, and the individual's perspective, which was really evident in that story that we opened with. When you say revenue, you're saying like a amount of MRR or ARR managed per individual, you know, maybe as an account manager or something like that, right?
Exactly. And if you are more project-based, it might be sort of looking at the burn down and revenue affected by burn down and what you've actually accomplished on a contract and what amount you have. But for simplicity's sake, it's really how much money is coming in the door every single month that that particular individual or team is going to be fulfilling.
Yeah. How much are they responsible for fulfilling in some form or fashion, whether that's retainer-based, project-based, hourly, all of those sorts of things. So great stuff there. I want to get into next, Amber. What are some of the roadblocks to getting these data points from all three and how you can overcome some of those? But tell me a little bit about maybe where you start. What tools, what metrics are you typically looking at for these three, the revenue, the time estimates, and the individual's perspective on their capacity management?
Yeah, I think from a time estimation standpoint and looking, starting there, it kind of depends if you are in a position where you have high accuracy in time or you have the data available to make time estimates as an agency. If you can lean on data that says, hey, typically a blog post is 3 hours or whatever that example sure. that thing might be. If you have the data to lean on, that's great, but you don't always have that data. And if you are in some of the work we do is highly complex mm-hmm. and the estimation part of it is something that there's a lot that goes into it. And even it takes highly skilled people to be able to estimate the work effectively. In that scenario, you might not have the data you need, or you maybe haven't done that exact thing before to say, oh, this takes us 2 hours or whatever it might be. That would be one thing is start by just putting an estimate, even if it's not 100% accurate, get estimates in there. If you have data, use it. If you don't, I'm a huge fan of like the Fibonacci or planning poker sequences. Don't focus on 30 minutes or 5 minutes or the small estimations. Those will eat you alive and cause you to really spend a lot of time on something that's not going to pay back in effort. Look at 1 hour increments, 2 hour increments, 3, 4, whatever makes sense for your company. But make sure that just a good practice is if there's work to be done, there's a start, end, and also a estimation of the time that it'll take to do that. That's how I would approach time estimation. From a revenue standpoint, it's really key, and I've learned this the hard way, is it's really key to make sure that your revenue forecasting in your deal pipeline, or even if in your P&L, is very aligned to how the work gets serviced. So for example, if you have retainers that are serviced by maybe three different teams, and because of the way you break that revenue down, you're missing a whole team and giving them credit for that revenue, then you're going to have blind spots or miss some things when you're planning out your capacity based on revenue. And then the last piece is from an individual standpoint, I think I've said 30-10 three times, but I'm going to say it four. Get in the practice of understanding what is our time frame for how we plan work on a team level, but also on an individual level. Usually for us, it's a week sprint. And so for every Friday, we're looking forward to the next week and planning out what are we working on? Are we going to be overloaded? And then we also look like 2-3 weeks out to make sure that we're not going to overload or somebody maybe might need to shift some work around. But as an individual, when they're taking part in that process, they're also going to flag and raise their hand when they need to take on more work or raise their hand if they need some help where needed. Mm-hmm. So practicing just being religious at planning and every individual doing that, I think is a big thing you can do. There's different ways of planning and going about that, but ultimately getting really clear about what's our time frame and what are we going to get accomplished in it? What's our list of things to do and how much will each of those things take? Kind of bring the individual and the estimation piece together.
One of the things you mentioned there, the 30-10. So you've touched on that a few times. If someone isn't crystal clear on that or they haven't used that framework in their agency, can you just recap, give us the 30 seconds on what's the 30-10 approach? Where does it come from and how do you guys leverage it to execute as it ties into capacity management?
Stephen Covey gets credit for that. 30 minutes before the week starts, plan what the week is going to look like. We physically put it on our calendar. So it's, hey, I have a call. I'm on a podcast right now. So going into the week, I had that on my calendar. But then the reality, especially in a client services agency world, is that every single day that gets shook up a little bit. And so spending another 10 minutes every morning resetting on your plan and making sure that if you do need to shift around your day, that you do it before you get into the thick of it. If you try to do that at noon after you've been working for a few hours, it's a little bit harder to reset and be flexible and be clear about what you're trying to accomplish. And it just ensures that at the end of the day, you're not promising more things to do in a given day than is possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we've talked about here, oftentimes when we talk about capacity management, we can think about the typical struggle that we envision in agency life. Leadership thinks the team has more capacity. The team is waving their hand and saying, I'm overloaded. Burnout is a serious issue. We've touched on that previously on the show, but that's not always the case. It's nuanced. And so we do need to develop these frameworks to be able to identify what is our true capacity as a leadership team, all the way down to the individual level. You touched on a little bit of the challenges, Amber, already in getting your arms around revenue, time estimates, and the individual input on their own capacity. But I'm wondering if you could take each of those three, Amber, in turn, and maybe any of the challenges with getting your arms around them that we haven't touched on. And then also, how do you start to overcome those challenges and get the data that you do need? As we've been saying, I've said triangulate probably more times than you said 30-10, to triangulate what is the situation with our capacity management.
The first I'll start with is revenue. And revenue, one of the challenges is I kind of alluded to this on how you get started, but when your revenue forecast doesn't break down the work in terms of who's going to service it and give those people credit, you're going to have blind spots. Now, the other challenge is that revenue is great at forecasting further out and looking at the future beyond next week or the week after, but it's not as great at looking at the short term. And that's where time estimations and your project management tools can do a better job of looking at the short term and the near term to fill that gap. So think of it as revenue is a long-term higher level forecast to understand, do we need to hire people? Do we need to shift around some teams or projects or things at a higher level? Definitely impacts business decisions. But then on a short term, time estimations and your project management tool and a good workload planning tool or capacity management tool will tell you, what do we need to be prepared for in the next week, 2 weeks, up to, I would say, sometimes 12 weeks. So you can see that sort of window of what we need to work on. One of the downsides with time estimation is that it's typically only about, on average, 70% accurate, I think, is probably what some of the data says. And so there is a level of inaccuracy. And there are some people who are more likely to overestimate versus underestimate. Human nature tends to lean on underestimating what something is going to take because we are ambitious humans. And so a downside or a challenge on the estimation part is that if you're leaning into individuals who maybe aren't super familiar with the work or as skilled at the work or haven't experienced it before, if you're leaning into them, they can tend to estimate a little bit inaccurately. And then the third thing, and I'm going to bring it all together, would be when it comes to the individual, it's the discipline and practice of planning a week. All of those other pieces don't come together if someone doesn't put together a solid plan. I would say we don't micromanage this, but if I start to notice that someone's struggling with what we call say-do, getting things done, when you say you're going to do something, actually doing it, when I start to notice someone struggling with that, first thing I'll do is go look at their calendar. Calendar's not built. There's the breakdown. Their calendar doesn't show that they're planning effectively. And so it's discipline. It's building that habit. And as somebody who started building this habit really honestly like 3 years ago, I want to say it took me at least a good 6 to 12 months to build that habit. So building the planning habit at an individual level is really key. And then bringing all of those pieces together, I would say it's how you position it and communicate with people along the way is really key. If you approach it as a, this is the truth, we're chasing 100% accuracy, you will have team members that are going to chase that accuracy and spend a lot of wasted effort. And actually, it'll lead to a lot of frustration when things aren't totally accurate if you're not positioning it as something that is 60 to 80% accurate. Our goal is to get better, not to be perfect. And perfection in this instance doesn't exist, but it's continuously getting better, then using data to get even better, even if we're starting with simply guessing what it might take right now. Mm-hmm. And then the other, I think this kind of is along the lines of change management and the communication of change management, is capacity is something that to an individual could be looked at and said, we could say, okay, leadership is trying to plan capacity so that they make sure our plates are full all the time and we get no time off, or we don't get a break in what we're doing or whatever. There can be this paradigm that it's in the business's best interest, but the reality is that we're all there to create a thriving business. And so it is a component to make sure that we're effective in what we do. And one of the big pieces that we try to communicate and train, and I think is not something to bypass if you are an agency, is helping educate team members about how it does affect the business impact. And this goes into, which we're not going to talk about today, I know, which is time logging. A lot of people wonder why they should need to do that. But if you have a good conversation in the beginning and continue to have that conversation around business impact and how impact can affect your impact on an individual level, people get it. They very quickly don't feel like it's a big brother, big sister type of situation. They feel like it's going to be used to create a better environment for us all. And a big part of that is also when people do look over capacity, we're not brushing past that. We're not saying, deal with it. We're actually adjusting it. So for us, it's also a conversation around, yeah, we want business impact, but we also want to create a great work environment and life for you, which means we have to look at that to do it.
I love this. The first operations leader we have on Agency Life, you're getting into the soft skills, you're getting into the change management, the people management. And what I heard you saying there is you've got to balance, one, communicating what time tracking and the metrics around capacity management mean for the individual more than just, can we make sure your plate is full? What is their impact and how does that fit into the overall business context? And then on the other side, making sure that you say the unsaid, that you do want good balance for them. You don't want burnout. You don't want this feeling of overload and anxiety that can come with agency life at times. We've all been there. As I mentioned, we had a great conversation with Shauna Knuckles, former PR agency owner, here on episode one of this show about how she recovered from literally a health crisis when it comes to burnout. So don't shy away from that. Talk about that, but also put this conversation around capacity management in the proper context for your individuals. So you touched on some of the things that you need to have in place in discussing things from a one-on-one perspective with your individual contributors. These are the things that we're looking at when it comes to capacity management, but also among your leadership team, you need to have a conversation about how you're going to have those conversations. So what are some of the things that you kind of lay the groundwork? If you're in an agency who's looking at these three components, getting your arms around the different metrics and how they help you triangulate your capacity management, how do you discuss as a leadership team how to kind of lay the groundwork with your team of what to expect?
I think it would be overwhelming to just immediately try to tackle them all at once. If I had to prioritize and recommend you prioritize, I might start looking at, first of all, the revenue. What's the long-term picture look like? Because that gets somebody in the business-minded aspect of, okay, here's how I'm going to affect and carry capacity and make sure that I have enough employees to serve the revenue I have, whether that's making sure that we're going over, under, whatever that might be. We're planning the number of people we need to serve revenue. The second big thing that I would look at is getting better at breaking down the type of work in sort of a broader categorized way and estimating based on that. So for example, the way that I've done this in the past is we literally map out on a spreadsheet, what are the 25 to 30 most common things that we do? And then we break it down and figure out, okay, we think the estimates are going to be this. Now that's more of a top-down approach to figuring out work estimation. So as you're going to people, and if you are doing that, I would definitely advise that you involve people from that are doing the role and people throughout to help inform that process. And then the other big thing, and I actually, now that I say it out loud, I would almost put the individual first in that, really from the beginning, emphasizing that they're going to be a very active part of planning the work week to week. I'm a huge fan of anytime I kick off initiative or introduce something like this, that it starts with feedback. What are people feeling around capacity? How are they, what are the pain points that they have today? Gather feedback early, then show that you're listening to the feedback through whether it's a small team call and maybe breakouts or a larger organization's town hall where you might want to address it at that. And then the last piece is really coming up with a communication plan and a structured approach to what are the numbers and how are we getting to the numbers. Agency people are smart. And so when you start to throw numbers at them, they you have to be ready to answer questions like, how did you come to that capacity number and whatnot? And so being prepared and thinking through those questions, maybe even depending on the size, but if you're a larger organization, maybe even rolling it out to a smaller beta group first to gather feedback and make sure you don't have you have answers when you release it to everybody are a couple of things that I think in any sort of change management initiative are helpful.
Yeah. So it sounds like your steps there were start with the individual perspective on capacity, gather feedback, show that you're listening to feedback. That was a key point that you dropped there. Cause I think the only thing worse in an organization is feeling like you don't have an opportunity for feedback is when you feel like you're consistently giving feedback and it's not even heard, let alone acted on, right? And then from there, look at revenue and then look at time estimations and know that none of those are going to be perfect and communicate that to your team that, hey, these are the different data points we're using, but we know everything is not black and white. So I think that's a really great framework for rolling out any sort of change when it comes to how you're going to manage capacity from an agency-wide level all the way down to one-on-ones. Any other advice you would give for agency leaders as they think about getting their arms around this data and then using it in conversation day-to-day with their team?
Realize that it's never going to be perfect. And I know I said that earlier.
It deserves repeating.
It really does. Because if you go into this and you make it seem like you've got all the kinks worked out, now try to work them out as much as possible. But if you approach it that way, that it isn't a learning, growing, evolving, experimental approach, you are going to be met with skeptics as soon as maybe an estimate doesn't look accurate. And that's not the goal. It's to focus on getting incrementally better, not to come up with the end all be all solution on day one, because especially as your services might evolve, so to do your capacity planning mechanisms.
Yeah, that's a really good point. The last thing I wanted to ask you on this before we get to our final two segments that we always have here on Agency Life, Amber, is you mentioned that you went through your own growth process of developing that discipline of a planning habit, following that 30-10 rule and really managing your calendar proactively and effectively. What were some of the things that were unlocks for you that might be helpful for other agency leaders who are working on that discipline themselves and also trying to coach and instill that discipline throughout their agency?
You have to set the example. And one of the best ways is transparent calendars. I can't get caught asking somebody to plan because they could go and look at mine and see that it's not done. And then you are a hypocrite immediately. So it is putting it on your calendar to practice that, and to open calendars in a remote world are a great thing in general. But by setting that example and doing it myself and constantly resetting it, the team knows that I'm doing it. And so when I ask them or call them out on not doing it and reminding them of that habit, they do it. The other thing is it's a key part of our onboarding process for all new employees too.
And how do you guys set the stage for that?
We do like a teach them how to do it. And then we review and plan for an hour with them going into their first week and second week. So once they start to see some client work show up, we've seen that's when that practice really needs to come in. And so it might be one or two sessions, working sessions where we're planning together, or it could be a little bit further down the road doing some extra ones as more client work comes their way. But it's really a working session where we do it together.
I love three things about that. One, the leading by example that was part of your initial response. Two, the tactical advice of opening your calendar. We all have that option of public or private on Google Calendar that we're all using. So very practical tip and how to execute that leading by example. And third, I love what you guys have done at Instrumental Group. Since this is so critical to this area of capacity management, which can be the bane of our existence within an agency if we let it, don't just let blurb in the training doc, or even a quick video do this for you with new hires. Make sure that you share with them, here's what we do, here's why we do it, and then let's get hands-on and let's show you how to do it and work out the kinks together, especially as you're starting to take on new client work. Really, really great stuff there, Amber. Well, it is time for our final two segments. We've got our fast five and then our time for a good shout. You ready for the fast five, Amber?
I'm ready.
All right. Well, let's say someone gave you and the leadership team at Instrumental Group an extra $10K a month to help better run your agency. I know you probably use it in operations, but maybe I'm wrong there. If you had that extra infusion of capital, no strings attached, how do you think you guys would use it in any area of the business?
100% people development. And that's because I just truly believe that if you keep developing your people, they'll stick around, and long-term team members are key to the growth of an organization.
I love it. Number two, what are one or two of your all-time favorite business books that have impacted your agency life?
This will come as no surprise because I've talked about them in this book, but The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People from Covey is probably the most impactful. And it's because I just am reminded to be a better human and not just a better business person.
I love it. That is such a classic, and for good reason. Amber, I love to ask this question. It's probably my favorite of the Fast Five. What's one mistake you've made in agency leadership that you'll never forget?
Overemphasizing results and performance over people and the grace of people. We all have different points in our life where maybe we can't do as well as we were the previous week, or maybe where we're learning and growing. And so it's to learn to have grace and faith in the growth of people, not just where they're at today.
Mm. That is so good. All right. We're at our final two. Amber, what would you say is the hardest part about agency life?
It's like a roller coaster. And if I'm being, I love roller coasters. So I guess it's maybe like a catch 22 there, but there's a lot of highs and lows. And so I think the more you do it, the more you get acclimated to that. But when you're new to the world, when you have a really great high one day where a client's praising you and then the next day where they're not, it can really make you feel like you're on a roller coaster. And so I think that's the biggest thing, is just that there's a lot of highs, there can be lows, and learning to kind of find that middle ground and enjoy the ride is a big part of the growth as you get better in agency life.
So good. I think we use that roller coaster ride both in our trailer and the show description here on Agency Life. So good to hear we're in line with some other experienced agency leaders like yourself. Well, maybe you'll just say your answer to number five is the same as number four, because you alluded to a little bit, but flip side of the coin, what do you think is the best part about agency life?
I get to, in my agency life, I get to work with people and be on the phone with people all day. And I love being a part of people. It's really people of all different types of backgrounds and businesses that come from different backgrounds. So unlike the roller coaster, it is, even when the clients might hand you a difficult situation, it's really getting through those, persisting through them and growing relationships out of that. So number one, it's that I get to work with people all day, whether that's my internal team or clients.
All right. Well, Amber, we're going to close here as we always do, give you the opportunity to give a shout out to someone who has impacted your agency life, whether that's a mentor, a coworker, a boss, anyone really. Who comes to mind for you today?
I think we've talked so much about a principle 30-10 that I learned from our CEO, Eric Pratt. He sets that example every week when he plans his week. And when you're struggling, he'll be the first thing he'll remind you of. I think I would have burnt out by now if I wouldn't have practiced that as well as I have the last few years. So I have to give credit to him because it's a planning mechanism that has essentially kept me from wanting to jump ship out of the agency world.
Well, I am glad that you have not jumped ship. I know that many people on the Instrumental Group team that report to you and other agency leaders that I know work with you are glad that you haven't jumped ship. So I think that's a great place to round out the conversation. Speaking of your network and staying connected with you, Amber, you know, you are active, helping run Instrumental Group. You're also, as we mentioned at the top of the show, a remote culture advisor, helping other agencies and other folks get their arms around their operations and their remote culture with your work at Culturish. What's the best way for people to stay in touch with you and get connected if they're not already?
Definitely LinkedIn. My handle is Amber Chemist. And you can learn more about both Culturish and Instrumental and get advice about those different topics from there.
Well, I really appreciate the additions and the contributions that you make to the conversation about agency life every day on LinkedIn, and appreciate you joining me here on the show to do even more of that. Thank you so much, Amber.
All right. Thanks, Logan.
You've been listening to Agency Life, and if you made it this far, you're probably enjoying the show. If so, you can help other agency leaders find the show in about 14 more seconds. If you're listening in Apple Podcasts, you can simply scroll down till you see ratings and reviews and tap the number of stars you think the show deserves. We'll really appreciate it, and so will the other agency leaders who find the show based on your rating. And if you're looking for even more content to support your agency life journey, check out teamwork.com/agency life. There you can search through past episodes, get access to the Agency Life newsletter, and find additional video content to support and inspire you as you continue on this crazy roller coaster ride that is agency life.